There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 938. This episode brought to you by Squarespace. The future is coming. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Well, maybe the future is here, and maybe you should turn that cool idea into a new website because you have a cool idea and it's bursting through the front of your skull plate to get onto some type of digital platform, showcase your work, blog or publish content, sell products online, any kinds of services, preferably all legal ones. Announce an upcoming event or special project. Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, powerful e-commerce functionality, the ability to customize the look and feel and settings, products, and all of that with just a few clicks. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. There's a new way to buy domains. You're going to choose from over 200 extensions. And then analytics are going to help you grow in real time. Also, built-in SEO, free and secure hosting, and then nothing to patch or upgrade ever, ever. 24/7 award-winning customer support to make it stand out with a beautiful website. Check out squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Remember, ID10T, that's the number 10 in there, which means 10% off your first purchase. You know what? I'm kind of being a little wispier right now because we are at Disney World. And we had a very long day of park hopping, and we got back and ate dinner to the hotel. And Lydia was like, "Oh, I'm just gonna rest my eyes for a second." And that was an hour and a half ago. It's 9:40 p.m. when I'm recording this right now, and she sacked out at like 8:10. The sun was out. It was a beautiful day. We got super saturated with Disney fun, hit all four parks. So maybe I'm just going to cruise through this intro pretty quickly just to maybe not wake up my dear sleeping wife. This episode is Robert Kirkman, who is promoting Oblivion Song, which is his new comic book series. It releases the day this podcast goes up, which is March 7th. So it is out now. And also The Walking Dead. And I think this is the fourth time Kirkman's come on. So he's got gold status by now. We're going to start setting up platinum status, diamond status, concierge status. Like we have a bunch of different statuses, and we should start giving people awards the more they come on. I feel like this is going to happen. This is what we do with the ID10T podcast, which, by the way, is also brought to you by Masterclass. Masterclass is an incredible online course program. You can learn cooking from Gordon Ramsay. You can learn photography from Annie Leibovitz. You can learn basketball from Steph Curry. That is the beauty of Masterclass. They produce online content classes that are taught by the best in the world. And each class is shot with cinematic production quality and offers on-demand lessons loaded with exclusive content. Like I said, I said the other ones up top, but also Thomas Keller will teach you how to cook. Aaron Sorkin will teach you screenwriting. Martin Scorsese is going to teach you filmmaking. Steve Martin. Did I mention Steve Martin? I probably mentioned Steve Martin before. That's the one I'm about to watch. It doesn't matter what you're pursuing, any kind of passion, developing your career, looking to learn something new, maybe instead of, dorking around online, you actually want to put some knowledge into your head and try to find a new direction. Get inspired. Masterclass will help you do that. You're going to get access to the best at their craft so you can master yours. So if you're interested in more than one class, check out the All Access Pass, because the All Access Pass allows you to unlock every class from over 30 masters, all for the price of two. ID10T listeners can get the All Access Pass at masterclass.com/ID10T. Learn from the best in the world at masterclass.com/ID10T. Thanks to them for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast, which is episode number 938, the fourth return, a four-peat of Robert Kirkman. Katie, please quietly roll the thing. And I'm going to go check to see if I woke my wife up, because I'm a loud individual by nature.
Shh. Initiating ID10T protocol.
When I did used to drink vodka, was one thing that I just could not stomach.
Oh, really?
I just couldn't.
More than like gin or?
I never drank hard alcohol.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was just always
beer.
You
could tell.
Yeah.
Says the guy that drinks beer all the time.
But I went through a period where I was like a short period of scotch and then a very short period of Irish whiskey, but that was it. And
that's when you tried to class up your alcoholism.
That's when I was trying to class it up.
You go, oh, it's aged like wine.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I better go higher up on the shelf. That'll make it okay.
No. Yeah. No alcoholic can point that high. I'm a fancy drunk.
God, I can't even imagine.
I'll take any drink that has a big ice cube.
I'm just even thinking.
Just one big ice cube.
One big ice cube.
I'm just even thinking about it, and I just feel my stomach turning. It's those days of waking up where you can just taste it when it congeals.
And you reach over to your nightstand and wash it out with some warm beer.
You're not a big drinker, are you?
Never have been, no.
No?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, that's a thing.
You're lucky. You're very lucky.
I just, I got to about age 10, and I was like, these are all the things I'll eat.
Just laid it out in front of you.
Kool-Aid, that's good. Done. You know. Hot dogs, great.
Sprinkle Kool-Aid on a hot dog if you're in a hurry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
Just mix it up.
When I was 25, I tried Indian food and I was like, oh. Changing my life.
I couldn't tell which way you were going to go. Like, an Indian food and, mind.
No, now I eat Indian food every day.
It's so good.
But it's the best.
Yeah.
But what were the food options available to you in a small town in Kentucky?
At age 10.
You said Kool-Aid and hot dogs.
Yeah, it's Kool-Aid and hot dogs. Yeah. Yeah.
Sugar on all of it.
We had a Chinese food place. And
Was it Cynthiana? Is that where you're from?
Yeah.
Is it still pretty much the same, or did it turn into like the same hive of franchise big box stores that every small town
Cynthiana is small, like didn't have, it had like a Walmart, like this isn't like a, there wasn't a lot of anything there.
So it's not like the old mom and pop thing became the Applebee's and the Starbucks and the home
Applebee's, we'd have to drive like 20 miles to go to an Applebee's.
Oh my god,
come on, what are you talking about?
I saw a headline that said millennials are killing Applebee's.
What?
Like they're not going, and it's like who fucking cares? Like who gives a shit? What are they doing, giving their money to an independent business?
So
they're bringing back the mom and pop places?
So I'm someone who actually has historically always enjoyed Arby's. So to me, it seems like comedians one day were like, Arby's, let's fuck over Arby's. Like, it just seems like an arbitrary, like, I've never known Arby's to be a, everyone understands this is horse shit.
I thought it was the
there was
nicest.
One day where like every comedian just started, that was like
Can
the
I tell
go-to
you where I think
joke.
That came from? Yeah. I think as a lot of things was born on The Simpsons.
I think it was
born on The Simpsons, and I feel like it might have been, I wonder if Conan had something to do with it, because I feel like he carried some of that.
But there was a lot of comics from the 90s, because like Blaine Capatch, who like we've written with him a bunch.
Yeah,
it's like if something's gross, his go to joke is I'm thinking Arby's.
I think it just sounds funny. I think it's just a funny sounding name.
Yeah, Arby's does sound hilarious.
Yeah. Do you think it's also the catchphrase that they gave themselves? Like, I'm thinking Arby's, that you can put that on anything? Because it's like McDonald's said, I'm loving it. And you're like, well, that's pretty positive. Yeah. But it's like I'm thinking Arby's. He's like, like how though?
I'm going to define what Arby's means.
I just shit out my pelvic girdle. I'm thinking Arby's.
I loved Arby's. I thought it was the fancier of all the fast foods.
Curly fries?
Roast beef, sliced meats, not just ground beef shit.
But it's kind of just like, but the cheese on it is a sauce. It's like cheese sauce, right?
You don't get the cheese one. What do you know?
You don't get the onion cheddar.
No.
Oh, guys, I guess
you get the regular roast beef.
You're doing this all wrong.
We get the big one. where they just put more.
Or the giant one, yeah. It's great.
And their shakes were some of the best around.
You know what's a bummer, though, is that at a certain point in my life, I just can't really eat fast food anymore without really needing to take a day off.
Yeah, we're all there.
Yeah. I get heartburn driving by Jack in a Box now.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh, the reflux.
Phantom reflux.
Like when I knew I was an adult was when I watched a Carl's Jr. commercial and I was like, no.
Why would I want a sandwich to get all over the place?
It's so big.
Messy is bad. Yeah. Messes are bad. Well, when I first met Jonah, he was like 19 years old.
Oh. Yeah, it's me across the table.
And I would still drink. I was still drinking. We'd go to comedy shows. Yeah. And Jonah,
I love your Star Trek after show. It's great.
when Jonah would drive me through Jack in the Box because you know he wasn't drinking because he was underage.
Designated.
And when I think about those days of being super drunk and eating fast food at like 2 o'clock in the morning and somehow not dying, I can't even wrap my brain around how I survived.
Yeah, Chris would always request like it was Jack in the Box that you won more than any other.
Yeah, it was the spicy crispy chicken spicy chicken sandwich. Yeah. That was fried with French fries at 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah. I think I remember you also ordering for the drink a Diet Coke.
Well, you know, I was
like that tenacious.
Yeah,
half diet, half regular.
Jonah, I just had 15 beers. I can't very well drink an extra sugary drink.
Yeah.
What are you expecting? Oh my God, I was disgusting.
So growing up in Kentucky, I would say that I was a fast food aficionado.
Sure.
Love some Burger King, love some Wendy's, McDonald's, Arby's, all Hardee's. That stuff. Hardee's? Oh, you kidding me? Hardee's was the best.
Well, Hardee's is East Coast Carl's Jr.
Yeah, I mean, they were a completely different place, and then Carl's Jr. took them over and was like, here's our menu.
So that's what happened?
Yeah, Hardee's one day was like, yeah, we have all these different burgers.
Shit.
We're a different place now.
How different was it? And was it a dramatic change?
They were like shitty McDonald's growing up. Yeah. So like they had a little cheeseburger just like McDonald's cheeseburger, and they didn't really have like a Big Mac equivalent, but they had great breakfasts, which Carl's Jr. actually kept when they didn't change their breakfast menu when they took over. And I don't know for sure, but they might have incorporated the breakfast menu at Carl's Jr. So I don't know if like at a certain point they get great breakfasts.
Yeah. And now I heard that Instagram is buying Carl's Jr. and you're only going to get access to burgers they feel like their algorithm.
Yeah, that's what the only things they want to give you.
That's awesome.
I remember growing up in Hawaii, we didn't have all the fast food places, but we'd still see commercials for them, and it was always such a bummer to like
out in LA,
it's like Sonic Burger. Like I remember there was. Before we ever had a Wendy's, I would just see commercials for Wendy's all the time. I was like,
What's a square burger taste like?
I want to know.
I mean,
do you eat the corners off before you get to the bun? What does it do?
How many places had a big Kahuna burger where you were growing up?
None. Maybe some in Waikiki. I don't know. Yeah.
It's like saying to an Australian, do you guys love Foster's, right?
Yeah. You love Foster's and shrimps on Barbies.
Right.
Yeah. When was the first time you had a cheeseburger that didn't have pineapple on it?
That's always the worst. Like, it doesn't belong on so many things, but they go, you go to any restaurant, it's like, you know, here's a guava glaze and a flame broiled pineapple on cheese and meat. It's a dumb idea.
I'm not a pineapple fan. I do like pineapple and pizza is a terrible, you do?
Yeah.
It's just so stringy. It's so chewy and stringy. It just feels
fuck you, man. Pineapple's the shit.
Oh, it's great. No, it feels like you're chewing the inside of an insect.
I will say, having actually gone to Hawaii now, pineapple there is like way different.
Yeah.
It's like, what is this fruit? Yeah. It's like 10 times better than stateside.
They've been sending the bad stuff to the Howleys.
Yeah, exactly. But I remember there was a street performer on Kalakaua Avenue, Waikiki.
Kahuna?
The Big Kahuna. And he would just play like a bass drum, a snare, and like a hi-hat, and like would just freestyle rap like all night about like people walking by and tourists and stuff like that. But he always had like a go-to line. It's like, and he would say, pineapple's Cuban, taro is Hawaiian. It's like, get the fuck out of my town, you howlies.
So I didn't even try to rhyme it.
Yeah, he wouldn't even try. That was just his go-to, you know, thing.
So they put taro on stuff.
Well, taro is like taro root. You make poi out of it.
Why did you cradle? Poi. Oh, you were doing like a pestle, a mortar, and a pestle. Like
yeah. That's a poi pounder.
Okay, a poi pounder.
Yeah.
That's my favorite porn category, by the way.
Poi pounder?
Yeah. Come on, guys.
Man,
come on, where are we? What are we doing?
They grind up your taro root over there. Yeah, you throw that in a pineapple.
Where'd you go?
I don't know what this pornography thing is you're talking about. I have no idea.
I went
there for a convention. Whatever island Honolulu's on.
Oahu.
There we go. It's a shithole. It's real.
Yeah, I mean, it's real dirty, huh?
I'm not supposed to say that on podcasts, am I?
No, it's a real dirty.
I was shocked. Like, there were parts of it where I was like, it's this looks rough. Like Kentucky.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
It's a low-income place for the most part.
Yeah.
It's also very expensive.
I mean, I just drove through those parts and went to the other parts. So,
yes, yeah. To the what? The other parts? The beach?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, there's like a lot of Hawaii is, you know, just low-income, you know, areas. It's a, you know, it's not like a, it's not beautiful everywhere.
What's the main
houses on stilts and whatnot, you know?
Yeah. But what's sort of the main resource in Hawaii? Like what's the export? Like what
tourism, yeah.
Just tourism.
Yeah. That's
and pineapple.
Not as much anymore.
Really?
It was just like with globalization.
Taro,
like,
you know, Jesus.
Because yeah, it's cheaper to, you know, grow any of that stuff. Like, you know, sugar cane, which was the first thing that like people came to Hawaii to exploit. And then it was people.
All right.
But then it was pineapple. Pineapple's brought there as like sugar started getting grown in other places. They brought pineapple over and kind of started taking over some of the Dole. That's the guy that did it.
Bob Dole.
Really?
Bob Dole.
Bob Dole.
Bob Dole.
Bob Dole's taking over Hawaii.
Yeah. But they also, so it's, it's tourism, pretty much. That's the only thing.
Has tourism in Cynthiana gone up because you are from there and people love the Walking Dead?
They do a lot of Walking Dead stuff now. So
they do.
I believe tourism has gone up. Yeah, there's a big mural and there are some locations from the comic that were in Cynthiana that they do little tours of. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But I wonder, that's kind of an interesting idea. But so if a town... Obviously, a town wants to sort of, you know, a town needs to bring in money, but at a certain point, you don't want the town, like, you want it to retain the charm that it has. Like, you don't want it to become an industry.
Yeah, well, and also, I'm sure there's a ton of people in Cynthiana that are like, really? Enough of this Walking Dead stuff. Like, we don't, we don't need these, zombie t-shirts and crazy Walking Dead people walking around.
We don't need to be
time.
Reminded about this how much is, we didn't like this guy in high school.
What's yeah, that? Well, like,
that's
what's
the possible
town?
Too.
Is it Twin Peaks, the town in Washington where like they, you know, they shot Twin Peaks? And it's like they, you go there and all the gas stations have Twin Peaks shirts and, you know, Where's Laura Palmer stuff. And you always find those small little towns that just kind of take in whatever pop culture, you know, thing.
Well, I guess it's better than meth. I mean, you know what I mean?
You've never had meth. What do you know?
Yeah, you know what?
A t-shirt
being from
the show. Thankfully, I did have meth when I was 10, so it made it just under the wire.
Yeah. I did read, like I said, I read the Oblivion song that got sent over, and it's fucking cool.
Oh, good.
You brought
good
three copies. I'll take two.
I didn't bring one for you, Jonah. I'm very sorry. I had no idea.
All three for Chris?
Yeah, I thought Chris might want to read it three times, or he might have three rooms in this.
My wife just wants one nearby whenever he needs it. Like, where is it? Oh, okay.
Lydia was asking me, because when I was reading this, she was like, oh, what's that? I go, oh, it's this new comic that Kirkman did. And she was like, wait, so how does he do the show? And so he's not doing the Walking Dead comic? I go, no, he's still doing that. He just, you know, bounces it all around. So how many different things are you working on?
Well, I'm enough that I don't keep a number in my head. So, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't know, a bunch.
Would that overwhelm you think?
Probably. I mean, yeah. I try not to think about it. But, you know, it's just my life is like one of those what's that? Did you ever play that police 911 shooter game at the arcade where the guys with the batons would come at you and you have to knock them back like three and there's like a row of 12 guys and you got to take turns keeping them away from you. That's how I look at my projects. It's like, Oblivion song. I got that one three steps back. I got to walk around Walking Dead. Okay, that one's five steps back. I got to do on that. You got to work on this. So,
I'd appreciate it if you did a burger type analogy with this.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll do burger.
So you know
can we do another?
You know when you're being attacked by a bipedal fried egg and you have to climb a ladder and then drop a bun on him of a big kahuna burger? I'm just trying to tie it all together.
Yeah, you
know,
terribly.
I know. Well, you know, what do you want? Hey, what do you want? You didn't pay for this.
But I was listening to the other podcast with Matt and you guys where you announced the changeover to Idiot or whatever this thing's called now. And I did start to realize, like, you know, you guys have schedules that are completely unlike mine because I'm not like getting on planes to go do stand up or.
But you go to conventions and stuff.
Not that often, like maybe two or three times a year.
Oh,
like,
that's not bad.
I try not to do it. I mean, you know, because I do enjoy working and you know, it's harder to fit it all in. But you know, and you're on camera all the time. Like, that's crazy. Like, you actually have to, like, be at places in front of things. That's
Yeah. And as you heard on that podcast, it can kill it. It
it's almost destroying Matt.
Yeah. It's destroying.
Well, my plan has finally come to fruition.
I know I'll assault him with success. That'll be his undoing.
It'll tear him apart.
Once he realizes it won't fill the hole. Oh, boy.
Man. If the schedule doesn't kill him, his own self-destruction will. His own need to kill everything good will.
Yeah.
No, I guess, but I guess I sort of feel like the same way, where it's just a constant, it's like, you know, what fires do I need to put out today in order to get through this day? And then you just kind of keep doing that a day at a time, and then eventually you have a body of work behind you, I guess. I don't know.
And then you die.
And then you die.
Unfulfilled.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah,
and then and as you're dying, you just get a long enough moment to think to yourself,
Yeah. What did I do?
It's like, you know, on my deathbed, I don't want to think to myself, maybe I should have argued with more people on Twitter.
I think of you as more of dying in a tub kind of guy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like accidentally?
Go crazy.
Jesus Christ. Like, what do you think I get into?
Matt Myra throwing a hairdryer in there or something?
I like that you think that I would one day be able to afford a tub that a person my size can actually fit in and drown in.
Thanks
to you.
All right, outdoor shower.
Yeah. Yes. You're soaking, your Japanese soaking tub.
Jonah somehow drowned with dry legs. He could have put his feet down at any point.
He was in the tub, but he still had his shoes and socks on.
It was a very deliberate suicide.
Just naked, except from the knees down.
Yeah.
Just knee-high socks with, sneakers on.
He just piled a bunch of the stuff he bought that he thought would make him happy on top of his chest.
He literally tried to fill the hole in his body. He dug out a hole and then smushed in. Yeah. All this stuff, all his toys.
Records and books, all.
Do you collect a lot of stuff, or did you stop doing that because at a certain point there's just no room for more stuff?
No, I buy a lot of dumb stuff. I buy a lot of old toys. You know, things that I had that you can buy unopened on eBay. That's a real poison for me. It's usually when I go on set. I'll get bored on set, and I'll just start buying all kinds of, like...
What's some of the stuff?
I got a full set of, the Mattel Superpowers toys, and then I got, the Kenner Secret Wars stuff, and...
Do you have them displayed, or do you just have them...
No, I got them in a drawer. You're just in a drawer. you just open that drawer, and you're like, oh, there's a bunch of unopened mask figures. That's cool.
He sent me a link the other day to Masters of the Universe cells. He was like, hey, do you collect these Masters of the Universe cells? And I go, well, I don't know. I don't really have any. I don't think I have any. I might have maybe one Masters of the Universe cell, but they're like $20 now.
Well, it's also like the lowest point in televised animation was Masters of the Universe.
That was a budget show.
Yeah.
but that's sort of what was charming about it, is that style of, you know, like super rigid, factory made, you know, just churning out cartoons to sell toys kind of stuff, you know. I mean, it totally worked. Mm-hmm. I wanted all those toys, but it's such a different, I mean, hey,
that's a good sound.
Yeah. Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, am I right? Just pouring water.
It's 5 o'clock water.
5 o'clock water. That's what vodka is. 5 o'clock water.
5 o'clock water. Yeah. I need my 5 o'clock water.
I said 5 o'clock water.
Oh my god! I've never seen him so angry. But it's part of the hunting process that I think is so satisfying. I mean, like, at no other time have so many humans been able to behave like fucking kings, where you literally can just summon anything you want. There was a Disneyland auction, and they were auctioning off one of the old curtains from the Grand California Hotel, because they got rid of all the curtains in the hotel, and they put in shower doors. And I was like, fuck, I missed it, that auction. So I just went on eBay, and I got one. It literally took 2 minutes.
Yeah.
I summoned a Disneyland curtain.
Bring me a shower curtain.
Bring me a shower curtain with Bambi on it and shit.
Yeah. I always think, like, there's certain things that, like, I think wealthy people pushed forward. I always think Velcro shoes. I think that was a rich person going, I don't want to bother tying my shoes. It's a waste of my time. Can someone invent something?
I need more time to suppress the masses. I can't bend down to tie my shoe. Yeah.
Ooh, elastic waistband. Grand idea.
Tying shoes, that cuts into my leisure time.
Untying, don't get me started.
Why can't the doors have Velcro on them, too? There's like one guy that just took it way too far.
Yeah.
I think, don't they make Velcro rooms? Aren't there like Velcro rooms where you can put on like a suit and then...
I got a Velcro room in my house.
Yeah?
That's how far I've gone.
Guillermo del Toro has a rain room, you have a Velcro room.
Yeah. You jump on a trampoline and then you Velcro into a wall. And...
Isn't that something that David Letterman used to do when he would do like stupid human tricks or something like that?
Oh, like someone would jump on a trampoline and stick to a Velcro wall?
Yeah.
Seems Blue Man groupie as well. I'm sure that's happened.
I used to be a Blue Man groupie. Followed him all around Vegas.
Did you really?
No.
Oh. God damn it. You just said jealous. That for the pun.
I did. He said it. I just
Stop blaming other people for your bad decisions.
But he said the word.
I don't care.
No, I brought that on all of us.
I don't care who said my what. Fault.
I appropriated the word and made it my own thing.
Don't bring those pineapple jokes into this taro root household, my friend.
I'm still trying to tie it together.
You are.
I really want to bring it back. Well, I just want to remind people that taro root.
So when do we start the podcast, guys?
Never.
No.
This is how we do it now. This is how it works.
Chris stopped caring.
Yeah, guys.
I see.
Fucking give a fuck.
Just thinking about the next time I'm on the wall. It's all I give a shit about now.
Make it Velcro. Just like a Velcro down the wall. I can't even look at the top of that thing. I get vertigo. The thing is 4 stories tall.
Yeah, you're really close to it. Can you tell what's going on when the thing's coming down?
I mean, you're right under it. I can see what's see what's happening.
I'm sure Robert has a ton of questions about the wall as well.
Yeah, what do you want to know about it, Robert?
When can I come on? I got lots of things to promote, man. Got lots of things to promote.
Yeah,
that's what it is. It's just a PR engine, the wall.
Yeah.
I think we should do a celebrity version of the wall.
The money just goes to charity?
No, that's the worst. How did you want that to happen?
Well, no, I mean, it's
charity gets so much money. Do they really need more?
Which charity are you talking about? It's not Jonah's charity. That's got nothing.
Walking Dead creator says all charities are bunk. What?
No.
Oh,
you're going to get me in trouble.
Come on, guys. Do you ever get in trouble just because, you know, you say snarky things a lot and I don't know if everyone...
Well, I think the trick on the internet is that if you don't care, you can't get in trouble.
So people
say mean things or they get mad at me about certain things that I say sometimes and I just read my Twitter feed and I laugh.
That's a good way to do it.
You know, because like if I cared, then I'd be like, oh God, like if I counted, I could be like, oh, 23 people are really mad at me right now. But
that's a very hard thing to achieve. Because sometimes I think people also really need to pluralize. Like when they say something, they go, hey man, everyone's talking about what a dick you are. And you're like, well, is it everyone or is it just like you and three of your friends?
Yeah.
I mean, that's everyone to you, but I'm still a sensitive flower.
Yeah.
I still
did you always not care?
Get my feelings hurt.
Yeah, you still care.
I can't help it.
I feel like I had I was really fortunate in that I came up through comics and, you know, in kind of a small microcosm of what I would eventually experience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had people mad at me on message boards and I had all my freak out moments like early on in comics. So by the time Walking Dead happened as a show and stuff started getting bigger, I was like, yeah, I've dealt with this on a smaller scale. I'm fine.
But it probably still felt exactly the same because especially the comics is still a very hyper-focused community and a very vocal community. So if they don't, you know, if they don't like something week to week, the only thing that I think is really interesting is just the idea that if someone might read one issue of something and then go, this was dumb. There was no reason for you to do this. And in your mind, you're going, but you don't know where this is going. This is like, this might be setting, maybe it's not for any reason, or maybe this is setting something up that you don't know about.
I think a really great thing happened to me very early on in my career that absolutely devastated me. But I look back on it and I'm like, God, it's like the best thing in the world. Because I went on a message board one time very early on in the Walking Dead comic, and there was a close friend of mine I knew who was posting on the message board under his name who was like, yeah, Walking Dead is just a real shit book. Like, I don't know what Robert's thinking. He's just not really a great writer. And it was like a friend of mine. And I don't think he thought I went to that message board or whatever. And I was devastated. I was like, I can't believe that guy's like going behind my back and like shitting on me in public. And I was really upset. And then I started thinking about it. And I was like, if we both worked at a factory and he was like, yeah, Robert's real bad at hammering out the sprockets.
Right.
You know, I'd be like, I don't care. We hammer out sprockets for a living. Like, who gives a shit if he thinks I'm not good at it? Like, I keep getting my paycheck and everything's fine. I go to the sprocket factory and we work side by side. And
yeah,
he can be judgmental on how I hammer the sprockets, but whatever, you know. And so I decided to look at it that way. So I never confronted him. I never said anything to him about it.
Oh, like, really?
I saw him, you know. I mean, we weren't that close. He was somebody that I saw from time to time. I didn't make a lot of effort to go out and see him. But no, I mean, I've never mentioned it to him. And I just decided, you know, like whatever. And I think having someone very specific do that makes it much more easy to take it in stride when people are like, oh, the new issue of Walking Dead sucked, bro.
What was his name?
Drag him.
Enough time. Let's find out. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't give him the pleasure of the plug.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But
that guy. Fuck that guy. I hold a grudge.
Yeah. And obviously.
I ruined him.
I ruined him quietly, so I still seem like the good guy.
Inside, I ruined him. I made a zombie look just like him, and then we killed that zombie, and then that was really helpful.
We do that every episode of Walking Dead, and no one has noticed.
Is that true?
It's always that guy must be every true. Time. Yeah, I'm like, Greg, no, the eyebrows aren't right. Get it back. It's just a very similar zombie in every episode.
It's just a shit list.
But yeah. I guess a lot of it also has to do with self-esteem and people poking at things that are really your insecurities, like, you know, like
that sucks.
That where you and sometimes it hurts because you feel like, oh my god, they're right, and they're gonna figure out that I suck. But then also, sometimes it just hurts because it's just mean, and you're like, why would someone just go out of their way to be mean?
Yeah.
You know. But a lot of it, you know, it's like, well, they care, like they really care about the thing that you're making, and you know, this, for better or for worse, this is just how some people express their ideas, and in their heads. It may not seem as harsh when they're thinking about it as the way that you are reading it when it goes through your own filter of all your own insecurities.
Yeah, the more stuff I make, the less I am offended by like bad shows or movies, where it's like I'll see it, and if I don't like it, I just go, it's tough making something good.
I say that too. It's hard. Making stuff is hard.
Yeah.
It's like a bed of nails. You know, if you've got enough projects out there, you know, the surface area is so wide that when you get attacked, you're like, the other thing I did is good.
Well, that is a great analogy. Yeah, if you just lie on one nail.
Yeah, if your career is making that great nail.
Yeah, defined by that nail.
Yeah.
Would you, do you think you have decent self-esteem, high self-esteem? Are you pretty comfortable with yourself? What do you think?
I think inflated? I'm very good at pretending I have a high self-esteem.
Is that true?
I think a lot of people that know me are like, oh, yeah, that guy's pretty, you know, confident and stuff. But, you know, not really. I'll come on these podcasts and I'll crack wise and I'll be mean to you guys. And then as soon as we stop recording, I'll be like, was that okay? Did I do?
You've never done that.
I know I've done that to you, Joe.
That's true. That's true. You did. Yeah. You did really pick on me pretty hard.
I don't know. And afterwards, I'm sure I was like, was it, you know.
I'd feel weird.
You
knocked
the glasses off my face and said, see you later, nerd.
I'd feel weird if you didn't do that to me. I'd be like, something's wrong. Yeah. He's not being himself.
I hate it like where it's like, I remember like when I was a kid, my grandfather was like mean to me. And my family was like, oh, it means he likes you. If he's mean to you, it means
I had
like,
the exact
like
same grandfather.
Yeah.
I mean, probably we're related. The exact same guy. But
but like, it's like, and I would always was like, that's so terrible. That's so shitty. And then my wife pointed out to me, like last year, she's like, you know, you realize you do that. I was complaining about that he did that. She's like, you do the same thing.
I wonder what that psychological makeup is. I remember crying to my grandmother and being like, my papa doesn't like me. And it's like, no, papa likes you the most. Mm-hmm. And that's why he is unrelenting and really mean to you.
I think it's just something. It's a thing that like he couldn't control and I can't control. And then so like I know when I'm very comfortable with somebody, I can let it loose a little bit, and then I know they're going to stick around.
But it's also just like it's from one point of view, it is lavishing attention on someone.
Mm-hmm.
If someone just didn't get the skill set when they were young and really understand like how to express, you know, love and affection in the way that most people would like to have it expressed.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, hey, I'm just poking at you. I'm just fucking poking
you. I notice you.
Yeah. What's wrong? Stop crying. Fucking pussy. You know, I mean, my grandfather did, my dad's father used to do that to him all the time, and it drove him fucking, my dad was never mentally prepared for it, even though he knew it was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, he would have to go through periods where he just did not talk to my grandfather because my grandfather would just, you know, my dad would go, oh, I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to go start this new business thing. Oh, you're too fucking stupid to run a... God damn it! You know, like, it always... He was, you know, he, my dad would always just kind of like... just lift a wing, and then my grandfather just knew exactly where to fire the arrow.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, like, well, you know, was my grandfather really a dick, or was it just he just didn't... That, like, that was his tools. That was his toolkit. Like, yeah, that's just unfortunately what he had.
What's that thing, some, like, saying, the same, like, it's like... Your parents or your close friends, like, they know how to push your buttons because they're the ones that put them there in the first place.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. So they installed the buttons.
Yeah, they installed the buttons.
Here's your problem right here. You got my genes. But I wonder sometimes if I – it's sort of the same thing. Like, oh, my God, am I doing a version of, like, what my grandfather did or stuff that my dad did that, you know, wasn't great? Am I just doing a version of that? But in my head, I'm not because it's me. And I don't, you know, no one ever wants to, no one says to themselves like, ah, so excited to be evil today. You know, like everyone, most people think they're doing the right thing.
Well, you got kids, right?
I was going to say, let old man Kirkman here give you guys a possible glimpse of the future. I have an 11-year-old son, and it's so weird to so often be in a situation where you're like, oh, that's why people don't like me. I know he didn't mean what he just said, but man, that stung. I had to pull him aside because he would hang out with friends of mine and he would see me rib them.
Yeah.
And then he's really good at it. So an 11-year-old little piece of shit would come up and be like, hey, nice shirt, pal. You know?
Shit.
And I'd be like, oh, dude, no, it's don't be like me.
Yeah,
the things you see me do are bad.
But also,
your father is not a good person.
Listen to my word, not my actions. Yeah,
but also, you know, like wielding comedy is a sword. Like it's a weapon, and people do learn. Like when people are first learning how to play with it, there's not any nuance, so they're just kind of swinging and breaking everything, not knowing like when it's
favorite,
okay.
I don't think I've told this story publicly, but if I have, I hope I'm not. I hope people don't mind me repeating myself. But this is my favorite thing that my son's done, and it's a really good example. So we're watching the movie Kong Skull Island.
Yep.
And when I drive with my kids, anytime I go over a bump, I'll say, "Hold on to your butts." It's like a fun dad thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. And we watched Jurassic Park a few years ago, and Samuel Jackson says, hold on to your butts in that movie. That's where I got it. And I'm like, oh, kids, you know, that's great. And so we're in the theater watching Skull Island, and Samuel Jackson in that movie says, hold on to your butts when one of the helicopters is crashing. And I look over at my son, and he's like, that's a thing you said, Dad. Like, oh, cool. And he's smiling. And I lean over, and I'm like, yeah, that's the actor that's in Jurassic Park that says that. And so it was like a callback to that movie. And I'm explaining it to him, and he just looks over and he goes, wow, must be a big moment for you, Dad.
He's not wrong.
Like, I thought we were having a moment.
Yeah.
And he was just like, can I watch the movie?
Shit.
Oh, God.
And he just skinned you and hung you by your feet in his hunting lodge.
Yeah,
there's nothing you can really say. Like, that is one of those there's no comebacks.
Yeah.
Where you just kind of have to just lean into it and be like, that's right, we're having a moment.
Yeah. It must be real big for you.
It is.
And then you scoot one seat over.
It's going to be even bigger when I leave you behind.
We were already a seat apart. I'm not sitting next to a male in a movie theater.
Yeah. That'll come back to bite you in the ass.
That is amazing.
Have you seen people that do that? I always make fun of people that do that.
Yeah, I leave a seat in between.
Yeah, the seat in between. The comfort seat.
No.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
Especially if you're listening to this and you do the comfort seat, fuck you.
Yeah.
It's weird. People make fun of you.
Have you had a conversation with your son about, you know, there are times when this is appropriate to make fun of people and times when it's not appropriate to make fun of, or do you just kind of let him learn and figure it out?
I have just said, look, you can say whatever you want to me. Like, you and I are cool. Like, I totally get it. Like, you know, let it fly. But try to be nice to other people. Yeah. So it is, you know, I'm like, speaking from experience, kid, like, it's very easy to make people not like you.
I've, you know, tried to curb, like, a lot of stuff lately. But, like, Deanna notices when I, like, hold in a joke instead of just saying, like, the joke to make fun of somebody when something happens. And she, like, I go, well, what is it? You just go, Like, it's just, that's the noise I make.
Yeah.
And it's just because I thought it's me laughing at what I said, but also holding it in at the same time. and just goes,
and she knows it's a
tell. She knows exactly it. Yeah.
What other tells do you have? Lydia noticed something that I never noticed before. She would, we'd be in bed, you know, like watching TV or something, and then she'd go, "Why are you stressed?" And I go, "What are you talking about?" And I would be stressed, and she goes, "Oh, well, you, it really hates, it really sucks when someone close to you like reveals something to you, yeah, and you're like, oh shit." But I guess when I'm stressed, like a fucking chimp, I will scratch my head and then let my hand like fall and hit the bed. And I legitimately never, it wasn't even something that I knew I was doing. I never noticed. And then I go, "I don't know what you're talking about." She goes, "Oh, you do this thing. You thud your hand really hard when you're stressed." I go, "I don't do that." And then like 10 minutes later, I did it. I was like, "Oh my God."
Oh, shit. So I will sometimes, because I'm an idiot, I'll go, "Hey, I was getting ready to make this joke, but I didn't, and I will say the joke." And my wife, and my wife will be like, "That's just as bad.
Just as bad."
So somehow, yeah, but you know why? Because the reason is because you're not only are you still saying it, you're acknowledging that it's wrong, and saying it at the same time.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite shitty bits to do. It's like if I'm hanging out with a couple and one of the couples like leaves to go like to the bathroom or something like that, I just lean and go, "Are you okay?" And it's always so weird when someone gets in, they go, "I think things are fine." And then like, when they don't get, they're like, "What are you talking about? Everything's great." Like, oh.
So your recurring joke is hold on to your butts. Your recurring joke is everything okay?
Yeah, I guess that's one of them.
Do you have any reoccurring bad joke that's
I have a reoccurring fucking stupid as hell joke is when a guy, it has to be a guy, but when a guy shows me a picture of like his new baby, I'll go, "Oh, in time you'll learn to love it as your own." Like that's nice. My favorite.
That's a good
dumb
one.
Joke because it doesn't hurt anybody. It's obvious that I'm kidding, but I don't think anyone's ever laughed.
One of my go-tos is if someone like, "Is it okay if we take a picture?" And I go, "Nope." And then still go in to, you know, for the picture. It's like, you know, "I hope you don't mind." I do, you know, but just still doing it. And so it just, it's the juxtaposition of words and actions.
There's an urban legend. I don't know if it's true or not, but there's a sort of urban legend. I wish I had asked him when he was on, but where I guess a guy asked if he could take a picture or if he could take a picture with John Cleese or something. Mm-hmm. So a guy went up to John Cleese and basically just fanned all over him about Monty Python. And then John Cleese just laid into the guy like, "You silly little man. This was, you know, this show is, it was decades ago. How can you waste your time?" Just completely obliterated the guy. And the guy was just left stunned. I mean, literally that feeling of like, "I want to die. I want to hear." And Cleese turned around to walk away and silly walked all the way around.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. But you really have to have a lot of confidence to pull that off.
Yeah, yeah. There's a...
What if the guy didn't see him? They're just like, he was silly walking, and Cleese turned out.
He's like, "Ha-ha, what did he get?" Oh, no,
and
he jumped in front of a bus.
Down the street. Exactly. Yeah,
my
hero.
Dee and I have a reoccurring joke that's like a real bad joke, but it's when that movie P2 came out. It was a horror movie.
The parking garage. Yeah.
And it was, the tagline for it was... the next level of horror or the next level of terror, something like that. And then so it's like every time one of us goes like, "I have to pee," and then the other one says, "Well, I have to pee too," the other person has to say the next level of terror.
I like that inside joke.
Yeah, and it's been going on for almost the entirety of our relationship.
Do you have
that
one
joke
with
has
your
more
wife?
More longevity than
P2
than the movie itself. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't want to talk about it. She'll sometimes say like "I gotta go. I'm gonna go jump in the shower," and I'll be like, "Yeah, you shouldn't do that. You might slip." or she'll be like, "I'm gonna run to the store," and I'll be like, "Yeah, you should probably take a car. You'd get there faster."
Yeah.
And I do it because I know it's not a funny joke, but I've been doing it for so long that it's kind of turned and
Now it's like it's the fact that you're still doing is
it's like I would do it ironically, but now I'm just owning it. You know,
so, and then it becomes like an impulse. Like it just becomes that thing that you say in response.
And my favorite thing is, you know, like my wife going, "Ugh."
Well, but if you don't do it, though.
That's her reaction.
If you don't do it, I think she'd be weirded out because that would mean something was wrong. If you break the pattern, you're so far in at this point.
Yeah. It does become like an OCD thing.
It does,
Where it's like, she'll say it and I'll be like, "Don't do it. It's not funny." don't do it. Don't do it. She doesn't like it. She's never laughed.
But if I don't say it, maybe she will slip in the shower.
Yeah. Oh, it's like if accidentally like bumps into me or something, she'll be like, "Oh, I'm sorry." Like, and I'll go, "Apology accepted."
Yeah, but yours are
are actually funny.
Yeah, yours are good. The whole shower thing.
You know,
she might crack her head open. Your wife.
Yeah.
I find that I make like mean jokes with Lydia, but I'm never like, I don't say them in a mean way.
Yeah.
And she, you know, and she's so sweet that it makes it even funnier to me.
Yeah.
And it, so another one is, I'll go, oh, I got to go to Santa Monica. Why? Can't you stay home? No, that wouldn't be fair to my other family. Recurring joke.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not.
Yeah. Oh,
it's a good one until you have that other family.
Yeah, then it's not.
Yeah, one of my favorites in that kind of same ilk is just, it's like, this guy was saying something, and then I go, what's his name? Just fucking tell, I just want to know his fucking name.
I always like the game when your significant other, like, you're watching a show, and it's like, we watch a lot of true crime shows, and, you know, it's, the so-and-so died, but then the next day, his wife died, but he was out with this other lady. And she was like, you would do that, wouldn't you? And I'm like, oh my God, absolutely not. If you died, I swear, I go, first of all, hand jobs only for like a year. And not even in our bed, because this is our sacred marriage bed. Hand jobs in the guest room only. You know, it's that kind of thing. And they're like, oh, stop. But it's like, but you can't. Yeah. But the theoretical, like, no. The theoretical, like, oh, you would run off and sleep with her. Like, come on. Are we really going to have this real conversation right now? Is this a real conversation we're going to have?
That's a losing battle.
Yeah, that's like, that's what, like, so many conversations walking to that movie, Force Majeure.
Right. I know the movie.
You see that movie, Force Majeure? It's like, it's this family on a ski vacation in the Alps, and then there's a... they're doing controlled avalanches, and then there's this one avalanche that starts kind of going towards this outdoor cafe, and so everyone kind of starts to freak out, and then the dad of the family just runs away, like leaving his family behind.
But then there's no avalanche.
Then it turns out it doesn't come close to him, and so the rest of the movie is the family dealing with the fact that the dad bailed in a really
bad time. My wife, oh God, I'm going to tell this story. I'm definitely afraid of birds, which is ridiculous because they're, you know, small, gentle creatures. But the flapping...
Your company's called Skybound. That's where they live.
I know. It was a mistake.
So birdemic is what's happening in your head.
I was a kid, I went to a family friend's house and they had a parrot that like jumped on my shoulder and squawked and flapped its wings and like they had to like pull it off of me and it was a traumatic experience. And so now I don't like being around birds. And my wife refurbished this old house in Kentucky into a bed and breakfast called Ashford Acres, if you're ever in Cynthiana, Kentucky. But anyway.
Cut that out, Katie.
Yeah, that's fine. But I don't really care. But, but anyway, we were in that place before they had finished the remodeling, and a bunch of birds had like gotten trapped in there because they had come through the chimney and, you know, and they had like blocked it. And I don't know. But anyway, the house was like, had like 15 birds that were like, you know, those near death birds that are like hanging out in the window and you think they're dead, but they're not. And then my father-in-law's a badass, so he's just grabbing these birds with his hands and opening windows and letting them out. And so we're just letting him go from room to room grabbing these birds. And it was me and my wife and him and like five or six other people. And at one point, one of the birds got loose and was flapping around and I just bolted. I was just like, yeah, I'm out. And I just, I pushed a person out of the way. Right? And who may or may not have been my wife. And, I just left. And she's like, you George Costanza'd me.
The fire.
I can't believe you did that. And my argument is, I know you're not scared of birds.
Yeah.
And I know intellectually that they're not actually going to hurt someone. Yeah. But
she should respect your fear of birds. And she
definitely does.
Yo,
not.
Yo, bro, you need to take a look at this marriage.
Yeah.
Because that does not sound like for better or for worse.
And now that I mention it, I believe I mentioned my fear of birds on this podcast a couple of visits ago. And people started tweeting me pictures of birds. I'm not scared
tweeting.
Of pictures birds. Of birds.
Yeah, I'm tweeting.
That's
yeah.
stupid.
That's probably, not cool. Are you terrified of Twitter when you see the Twitter icon?
No.
You feel a little...
Not at all. No.
They are tiny dinosaurs.
It's only when they're there.
They are tiny... Airbound.
It's their feet that are the
like
most
my kids
unsettling.
Make fun of me. Back to my son because I won't go into when we go to the zoo. I won't go into the big birdhouse.
But they got like the crazy
they got
fucked
the stupid
up looking
little,
vulture thing. Right?
They got the nectar cups and the birds are like land on your hands and I'm not getting in there. That's not a risk.
Don't
I'm
even like
to
a, like
take.
A little finch or something like any kind.
I've
of
been at cafes and like the tiniest little birds have like walked under my chair and I'm just like.
And I hide it well, but inside I'm just dying. I think they're going to go up my like pants leg or something. Yeah, like, it's just
crawl into your body and nest in your
ribcage in his crotch.
Yeah. Chris, shut up.
Okay. Okay, that's fair.
There was 1 year in my life, I think it was when I was 18, where three times in this year I had birds kind of attacked me. Like I was in San Francisco and a seagull was walking by and then like flew into me and then like it seemingly grabbed my shirt and then I batted it away. I was driving a car and a pigeon just went straight into my windshield. Like it came down and it just was going towards me and went right into my windshield. And then another time it like a bird flew into my apartment and just like knocked over a bunch of stuff while trying to get out. Three times in 1 year and I was convinced I was cursed. I was convinced that one time that I made fun of a crow.
Just hearing those stories, I can feel myself messing up. Like,
it was not fun.
Not fun.
And now you work with a crow.
Hey.
Hey. Look us back around. Boy, pounding. I can't believe it's. I hadn't really thought about it in these terms, but it is mind blowing to me that Walking Dead, the show, is almost a decade old.
Yeah.
That is so weird to me.
Oh, shit, yeah.
That they're in season 8, we're in season 7. And it's the second half of season 8 that's coming up, which means they're already about to start shooting season 9.
Yep. Jeez. It's coming up.
That's fucking crazy.
That's nutty.
It's really weird. Yeah.
I mean, how long do you think this can go on? Is this in your head? Do you think the show could go like the comics? Like it could just keep going forever?
I mean, I think there's a potential there. I mean, obviously there's some logistical things that'll have to be dealt with in the world of television. I don't think Andrew Lincoln's going to want to be on this show for 50 years. But, but you know, maybe. I hope so. But yeah, I mean, I think as long as we're telling interesting stories and people are interested in the world, you know, I think we can go on for a good long time. So we'll see. Fingers crossed for at least season 15.
How spoilery. I wonder how spoilery.
My grandchildren's college.
So without giving too much away for people who aren't caught up yet, but someone got bitten in the mid-season finale.
Oh, God, we
got to
talk about this? Mm-hmm. All right, fine.
And...
He brought the comics book.
I'm here to talk about Oblivion Song. I'm going to Billy Bob Thornton you.
So
you're not bringing up Walking Dead.
Talk about my music.
Don't bring up the thing I'm known for. I'm here to talk about the thing that no one knows about.
It's ramparting. It's you be ramparting. Like the Woody Harrelson, the rampart thing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we please just keep, this is an AMA. Can we please just keep questions to rampart? Yeah. Okay, yeah. So.
I thought we were here to talk about my crocheting.
AMAAR. Ask me anything about rampart. What was in general was the response mixed to that, or were people angry or happy or like, oh, I get it. The show's
if you
changing.
Go by my Twitter feed, Scott Gimple and I are some of the most hated people in America. Okay. But it's funny because like the week before that happened, people were like, this show's lost its teeth. No one big dies. Yeah. F this show. I'm out. Lame. And I'm reading those going, just wait. Here it comes. Well, and now it's like, how dare you?
Yeah.
But you know, you don't kill the big characters. What's wrong with you? And it's like, that would be the worst.
You're thinking about business wise. You're like, you're really ruining your brand.
But from our point of view, all of those people work at the same company. And it's you're just hearing whatever the loudest, angriest voices are saying at any given moment.
The Fanco conglomerate has decided that Bento. We suck.
But, you know, I also, what I realize is that, because not a lot of shows make it to that many seasons.
Right.
And so when you are watching a show for that long, and it's not just a procedural where it's like, oh, this is just refillable every week. You know, we set up the, you know, it's CSI. Every week you know what the setup is, and we just change the mystery. Mm-hmm. You really form a relationship with a show, and you can get really aggravated with things on a show the way that you do if you've been in an 8-year long relationship, and you know things just get under your skin because you've experienced it for so long. So you know, in a way, I do think that that
like, means- I love this show because they kill characters all the time. God, they're still killing characters? 8 years of this?
Well, be and the it, thing, Jesus. Not the thing. And it can also just be that thing of like, oh, you and you're breathing in and out. You know, it's like that. It can be like that, but at the same time-
that's why shows don't usually last for 8 seasons.
But at the same time, yeah. If the show ended tomorrow, I think a lot of people would be really upset.
Oh, for sure.
And it would be a lot of those people that are telling you you're a piece of shit, I think, too. You know, because it just means that it just means that people care, and I guess.
And by people who are calling me a piece of shit, you mean other than my immediate
other
family.
Than your immediate family and your son,
and your friends, anyone that's ever come across you personally.
If anyone on Twitter thinks they can say things meaner to me than my actual son says to me on a regular basis, like,
and that guy who said that thing on that message board, who was what was his name? All right, try to get out of him. That man was Scott M. Gimple.
Yeah.
That would be funny, right?
He vowed one day.
Oh, you're show running it, huh? Yeah, I remember a guy that didn't like the comic, but whatever. Yeah, we'll see how this goes. You like the job, don't you? Yeah.
Well, and it's not just with the show, but it's also technology in general that sometimes I feel like, not technology, but like the world in general. It's like, you know, the iPhone. If it doesn't change every year, people are like, fuck, man, I didn't get a bunch of new features. Yeah. And if it does change wildly, then people are like, fuck, what are you guys doing? You ruined the old one.
It's like the internet has turned all the world into a complaint desk.
Well, because I think we all just want experiences kind of the way we want them, and there's no real rhyme or reason. And it's like, but change is necessary, and we crave it, but also change is scary, and we want sameness at the same time. We are constant consumer dichotomies, and I'm guilty of it too.
Which I try to combat by doing new projects like Oblivion Song.
I'm not familiar. What is that?
Ooh, that was a good transition.
So smooth.
Ooh, ooh. Shit.
Fuck.
Noob Noob gets it.
God damn.
God damn.
This guy gets it.
Yeah.
But before we get to Oblivion Song, are you? I do want to know because I haven't watched ahead.
Sure.
What is your general feeling about the second half of season 8? I mean, is it? How can you talk about it without giving anything away?
It's really tough. I mean, there's obviously a big event we have to deal with right off the bat, so that happens fairly early on. So that'll be all taken care of, and then that puts us on a trajectory that, you know, I think really heightens things moving into the back half and wrapping up the big all-out war storyline. I think that season 8 of Walking Dead as a whole was kind of one big story, I think, more so than seasons past have been, and it's really going to change the status quo in an interesting way. I feel like I'm rambling at this point. I apologize, but
no, that's okay.
Sound bites.
Yeah, I'm very sorry.
We're changing
not
the status quo.
It's hard not to sound like a politician when you're talking about stuff because you can't give anything
there's
away.
There's very little I can say. Yeah.
You can't really give anything away. You can't really say anything. Yeah. And it's interesting how.
And also, I talk, and I know that like every other word could end up a headline on
of course
some
it could.
Crappy website.
Of course it would. That's unfortunately how it works now. Like when you should.
Kirkman said the status quo is going to change. And then Twitter's like, you're changing the status quo? Fuck you.
Read the thing.
Oh, don't you fuck with the status quo.
No.
But it, you know. It,
like I was at the Walker Stalker. I was on the Walker Stalker cruise last week where I got the flu. So I highly recommend it. But anyway, it was a lot of fun aside from that. But I just like cracked a joke at a panel because they were asking about the thing. And I was like, well, guys, he technically hasn't died yet. Maybe he won't.
Oh.
And then I was like, but, you know, he's going to die and blah, 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 blah. That's going to happen, yada, yada. But they took that, like, there was all these articles where, like, Robert Kirkman says he's not going to die.
Yep. Everybody
like, you're playing with our emotions and why are you toying with us? And
but it's not, like, not at all upset at the blog who clearly took that out of context to get traffic.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're not holding media outlets more accountable for clickbaiting because they are manipulating your outrage.
Well, it's also bad because so many people just read the headlines.
That's it. Yeah.
So
that's it. But that's all they want because then you just get the jump. You know, like they get the click and then they get
that's like getting off of Twitter has helped me like read more articles as opposed to just like scanning through like and seeing a headline for a link and then going like, oh, I'll get back to that later. but then you don't. So you don't get the full context. Yeah. But then you still have that thing that made you angry in your head.
Yeah. Or something's in trending in the set. You're like, oh my God, I can't wait to unpack this. Yeah. But I got to do one other thing. You come back and it's not trending anymore and you forgot.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, all the hot takes I had.
So many hot takes that will go spoiled and unwrapped. I got to throw all these takes away. What am I supposed to do?
Hot takes. These get takes them. Were half hot. Price.
These takes were hot.
Lukewarm takes.
Day old takes,
yeah. It's wrapped up on
we
the side.
We should do the hashtag day old takes, day and then just takes. Like a day after shit happens, then zing it, and then just put day old takes, half price.
Yeah, that was like a thing. I remember it was like, I might be too late on this, but I just thought of a joke for this thing. That was like a big thing.
Are you still planning on doing the comics forever?
No, I mean, that's
the thing.
That's my passion.
Good.
That's what I mean,
the Walking Dead comics.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, Walking Dead comics in general. So, yeah.
Did you say the last time that you're doing Invincible is going to be a movie or a TV show?
Developing it as a movie right now with Universal, Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are writing and directing.
Damn.
It's going to be very cool.
Where do those fucking guys find the time?
No kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately.
Yeah, every time I talk to them, I'm like, so, another TV show, huh? Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, because literally in between every conversation I have with them, they announce a new show.
Yeah, it's insane. And I want to know, like, the delegation. Like, if they pass stuff back and forth, I can see that working, like, just, like, responsibly. It's like, all right, I'm going to go. I'll be on set today. You get these pages done.
That's what's so great about having a partner. It's, like, someone to be accountable to so that you know, like, that dynamic almost sort of works like an acrobat where it's, like, they're swinging each other.
Yeah.
Because if it's – a lot of times when responsibilities are just left up to you – you can talk yourself out of so many things because you're driven by your own emotions. Well, it feels good to not do that today, but you know if someone else is relying on you and they're going to be like, hey, man, come on, you got to get this done.
Where's those pages?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Next thing you know, you have 40 television shows.
Yeah.
And you're directing movies and you're in movies.
Yep.
You know what? Fuck those guys.
What? What? Why are you turning on them? They're nice.
It's just a moment of
jealousy. Save some for the rest of us. Yeah.
I wanted to direct an Invincible. Yeah. God. Roberts.
Just let me direct a DVD extra, show you what I got.
Stop giving it to Seth Rogen. They do a great job, though. I love that Preacher. Preacher's fucking
fantastic.
Great.
Yeah, it's great. I was catching up on that.
It's really, really great. Like, the first season, they really... It was it's such an odd world to just drop into. And so the first season really kind of just takes, like, just lays it out. And then season two just fucking moves. And the acting is great.
Yeah.
And there's, like, real human moments in this crazy, surreal, battle for heaven and earth with a fucking vampire in it.
And it looks good. Like, the shots are awesome. And it's all good. You know,
is Oblivion Song something that you were already? Have you already been talking about making it into a show or something? Or are you just making?
I mean, right now we're focusing on the comic, but there's always things going on behind the scenes. I wouldn't be too surprised if there's some kind of announcement at some point.
But when you started Walking Dead, you weren't thinking this is going to be a movie or a television show.
Definitely not.
So how does that change your approach to your writing process now when you start a comic and know that it could? Probably not even when you started Invincible, I would imagine.
I mean, Invincible actually started before Walking Dead, so definitely not. But, I mean, it doesn't really, I mean...
At what stage do you decide you want to sell out?
Yeah! Yeah, motherfucker! Well,
I mean, I represent the listeners!
Minute zero. I mean, I am nothing if not a sellout. But
the first thing I type when I'm coming up with a new idea is a dollar sign.
Yes. Yes.
The Skybound is just a dollar sign for the end.
Guys, you're supposed to talk about all the internal memos you've seen. All joking aside. I don't think about it at all. I mean, I just try to write a cool comic. I think that the things that are fun to write are fun for the artist to draw, are fun for the audience to read, like, tend to lend itself to, being adapted into other mediums. So I think if you do your job right and you make something, cool and fun and universal, I think there's a potential there. But, I mean, to be completely blunt so that, people understand that I am being honest here, I don't care if Oblivion Song ever gets made. I don't need that money.
Right.
I just want to do a cool comic. That's the stuff that I love. So I actually have more freedom to do whatever I want in comics now. So, I mean, that's going to be tough to adapt.
The Oblivion Song,
it's very strange.
Well, it's strange. Well, it's also just the alternate worlds is, you look at that and go, wow. I mean, it's possible. The technology's possible.
Sure.
But it's not easy, and it'd be tough to, You think you'd really have to pull it off in the right way. But ultimately, just to give people a taste of what it is, that there's apparently this like alternate alien dimension that people can hop back and forth into. And Robert's looking at me like, I wish I could show you the picture.
Tell me what my song means to you.
Tell me more, Chris.
I'm telling you just so you know, just so you, you know, you can tell me if I'm, you know.
I'm listening because I do not have a succinct way of talking about what this damn book is about yet. So I wanted to hear what your thoughts were.
Well, it's about how does humanity deal with this alternate alien universe when, you know, a handful of people were trapped there and the government needs to get involved to save a lot of these people. And then they stop at a certain point and one guy is obsessed with going back and saving people for personal reasons. And so, yeah, it's just sort of this jumping back and forth. And but I haven't. Yeah.
I like to call it apocalypse adjacent.
Oh, that's nice.
There's a big chunk of Philadelphia that's stuck in this other dimension, and it's been there for 10 years, and it's rotting and crumbling, and it's full of monsters, and there's people there that are, you know, cowering in fear and trying to live in this apocalyptic situation. But our character is in, you know, present day Philadelphia, which wasn't affected, and, you know, just kind of pops back and forth. And so he gets to go and live in the apocalypse for a day and then come home and drink tea.
But I'm wondering if you, because with Walking Dead, you know, you were very firm about, like, it doesn't matter what the virus is. That's not, and there's not a satisfying answer for what the virus is.
Yeah, this is different. There is a reason why this big chunk of Philadelphia popped over into the other dimension. It will be revealed. It's a big plot point. So this is, there's not like a frustrating central mystery that will never get answered because I'm lazy, like Walking Dead.
The great thing about the position that you're in is that you can just make this as long as you feel like making it, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's one of the things that I feel like makes this book better is I've been making it for almost 2 years. So, like, we're wrapping up issue 12 right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've been doing this in secret, Lorenzo and I, the artist and co-creator. And because we've been working on it for so long, I've actually been able to, like, do issue 8 and then go, oh, you know what? If I put a scene in issue 1 that does this, it'll actually play off of this.
Oh, that's
better.
Really cool.
And so we've been able to, like, go in and add pages here and expand things there. And
oh, that's because. Have you ever been able to do that before?
No, because, I mean, earlier in my career, like, can't work on issue 7 because you don't know if you're going to last past issue 6, you know?
Right.
So you could basically be working on a comic, you're going to throw down a well because no one's going to be there to read it. So,
right.
So you wouldn't do that kind of stuff. But now, you know, I can take those kind of risks.
I'm just going to give people a sneak peek. All right?
Oh, yeah, please. Oh, God, no. Are you going to read something out loud? Don't do that.
Yeah, no. It's fine. It's
what page are you on?
Son of a bitch.
Where are you?
Just the.
Oh, are you guys going to do a.
We're going to do a stage reading.
Please.
A little further back, Chris.
Oh, my God.
There we go. Okay, I'll start.
Okay.
Twakum.
Harak.
Wud.
Huff, huff, huff.
Funt.
Fuck.
Snap.
Flash. Okay, fuck you guys.
Cut scene.
I think we nailed it.
We really nailed
it. I think we brought it to life. I do. Thanks. I'm so glad I came over early so we could rehearse that.
Thank you for listening to this complete audio series of Oblivion Song.
I'll show you guys.
No. It was just a bit.
We're just doing comedy.
All right. I'm going to buy Idiot Industries, and then I'm going to kick Chris out, and he's going to have to change the name of his podcast again.
That's what's going to happen now. Big moment for you, huh?
Yeah. Pineapple, poi, powder.
I mean, it's one of the
damn it.
One of the things that I love so much, you know, it's like, you know, when people talk to me about Walking Dead, and they're like, but does it bother you that you're not, like, more critical of it? Like,
You do get a lot of flack for being positive about things, which I've always thought is funny.
But yeah, not even just that show, but it's like, well, everything I do is that way because there's just so much negativity in the world, and you know,
you don't waste your energy on, like, shitting on things.
Yeah, I just listen for the things that Chris doesn't talk about.
Ooh.
It's the lines that aren't there, man. Yeah. That's what you gotta see. There's no future in you know, being negative about things.
Well, I feel like I battle negativity in my personal life a lot, and you know, Lydia always says, like, well, happiness is a choice. And she's right, it is. Because you really – it's so easy to get so bogged down. Once you get into those, like, negativity loops, they're very hard to get out of.
Oh, yeah.
And you feel resentment and you start – it's just like grabbing a hot pan. Like, you just get burned inside and it fucking hurts. And if you get so conditioned to just see things negatively, that definitely has an effect. Now – you know, I guess you could take shots at me for, like, not trying to be, you know, like, you can say some negative things about stuff. But I just like being positive. And I consider you guys, like, I mean, we're legitimately friends. Like, this isn't a...
Whoa.
I'm coming over.
That was far too definitive for me.
We are friends. We are best friends. Yeah. We're best friends, Robert.
Oh.
We both wore gray.
That's true. That's true.
Jonah wore gray. Katie wore gray. Oh my God. Guys.
What's with
gray friends?
Gray friends.
I thought we were trying to be positive.
As a thousand Kirkman, birds.
Gray friends.
As a thousand birds just fly through the window. Blah, blah. I'm actually surprised.
Don't ever do that to me.
I'm actually surprised there's not more like murder bird imagery in your work. Based on that fear.
I try not to let my work reveal too much about myself.
Do you have
That's a huge concern as a writer,
by the way. I think
about
that a lot.
It's like you write a scene and you're like, what are people going to think about me because of this scene? Like, I don't really mean this thing I'm having this terrible character say. Like, that's not how I think.
Yeah, it's like, where'd that come from? That came from your brain? Means you probably think about
that. Well, that's why you got to be like Vince Gilligan, who's so good at writing really devious characters.
I would love
to
be like Vince Gilligan. Tell me how.
And is just the nicest guy in the world. Like, his personality is so... You just wouldn't... It's like, where does all the darkness come from that bleeds out onto the page? I remember that sweet, sweet head.
I remember, like, it was first season when the little girl gets shot in Walking Dead, and I remember, like, messaging you going, it's like, holy shit, you shot a little girl on television. That's great. And you just responded with, it's like, I guess I know what your thing is now. No, I just meant the ballsiness of it.
I've never seen that before.
It's unprecedented.
I just enjoy the death of children. I'm very sorry.
Wait, that came out wrong. What I meant to say is I enjoy the death. Okay, all right, great. No, I don't know if that came out right. But, you know, the challenge for a show, especially like when you start and the bar is that high and you're showing people stuff they haven't really seen before on an episodic television, it's sort of like, I always talk about it with Buffy, like, how did that show, at the end of every season, they all had to deal with the worst thing that world had ever seen? And first it was just like, oh, like, I had vampire. And then it just became crazier. And by season seven, it's like, well, now they are above hell. And it's just like, I don't know, you know, their town is on a hell mouth and there is hell. And so, you know, like, raising the stakes every year when people just start getting conditioned to be like, okay, yeah, I've seen that now. Yeah. So what are you fucking going to do now? And what? And do you ever think
more
about...
More zombies!
Get this, guys. Next season, more zombies.
Whoa, what?
And just, like, more...
Next year, we're going to have...
in the background.
An equal number of zombies.
Equal number of zombies.
What? Don't say the Z word.
Season 12. There's a giant zombie made out of zombies.
Voltron zombie.
It's called a zombie zombie.
This is a great idea. This is a really great idea.
Wouldn't people just shit themselves? Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
If all the zombies just like glom together into a giant zombie person?
It's like it would be one of those things that they all start going up against like a big wall and then they all kind of climb on top of each other. And then they all lean back and realize they're all stuck together and then they just become this symbiotic.
And it shoots lasers out of where its eyes would be. The audience would be like, I did not see this coming.
No, no.
I mean, there will eventually have to be a fuck it season, right?
Eventually.
It's like season 18, fuck it, giant... Yeah. Mega zombie shoots lasers out of eyes.
Yeah.
Are people
Eugene's like, I made these robot dogs. they're going to be able to eat all the zombies. It's going to be great. Good idea, Eugene. I made a big lion we can ride on.
the big
season later. 12 is fucking weird, man.
There was this old English
governor's
sketch.
Back. He's got a medal.
Bionic governor. There was the that sketch group Old English. Like it was after the first season of Lost.
English,
after the first season of Lost, like they had a sketch that came out, which was just like it's like just said Lost Writers Room, and then like it cuts to inside, and they're just like, fuck, 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 what do we do? What do we do? Why did we come up with that? Like, what was our, what were we thinking? The guy's like, there's a space turtle. They're like, shut up.
Damon probably saw that. He was like, yeah, that's probably probably what it was like. But that's part of the, you know, it's like if you're making a show, you want it to stand out, you want it to be interesting, and, you know, the allure to not completely blow everything you can do all at once, it's got to be really tough. You do have to have, you know, a couple episodes where they're stuck on the farm so that you can not maybe it's because of budget, or maybe it's because of
pacing,
you know, because of pacing, because of what's being set up. But I do not envy the task of, you know, it's like Jonah said, the more stuff I make, the more sympathetic I get to, like, man, it is hard. That it's astonishing that anything gets made.
Yeah, that's true.
So why try?
I was going to wait for just enough silence and then just end the podcast. Right?
Katie can add that in.
Yeah.
No, I
do that
know.
In post.
Yeah.
What are you excited about right now, Robert Kirkman? This is something I've been asking.
Mission Impossible Fallout?
What's the Mission Impossible movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my god, they released that thing on the Super Bowl and Tom Cruise is flying a helicopter.
Is he so hanging on to the helicopter, or is he in the? I didn't watch.
He's controlling the helicopter by hanging on to it, shifting his weight to make it fly in different positions.
Fantastic! Gets into a fist fight with Henry Cavill.
Oh, hey, so good, Superman! So good. They should have left the mustache on him when he came back to do the reshoots for Justice League. There's no reason Superman can't have a porn stash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was dead. They had a good excuse.
They could have.
You don't shave when you're dead.
It just keeps growing. It just keeps growing and growing. That's what happens.
So Mission Impossible. What else?
Deadpool 2. Looking forward to that.
I think they're going to be able to pull it off. I thought it would be tough to pull off a Deadpool 2 because you sort of feel like, oh, well, all the meta jokes about culture have been made.
Yeah.
But no, I think they've actually been doing a really great job. And, you know, he was on the cover of, like, Better Homes and Gardens or something, or Housekeeping. Yeah, yeah. I don't know, some, I mean, like, they've
got some really great creative marketing.
They're doing a really good job. I'm excited about that, too. But what are you excited about in the world? Is there anything outside of entertainment that you're
outside
excited
of entertainment?
About?
No, what, not what a is thing. That? Not a thing.
There's that's a place?
That's a place?
I don't know. I might be going to New Zealand for the first time soon.
Nice.
Oh, where are you?
Taking a little family trip.
I've always wanted to go there. A couple friends of mine moved there.
Really?
Yeah, they had gone on a trip, and they're like, that's so great. Let's go again next year. They went again next year.
And they
stayed a little longer.
Never left.
And they came back, and they're like, we're going to move.
Band meeting.
Like, we're like, yeah. There's just, it's like, my friends Chantel and Jimmy, they were just like, let's just move there. It's great there. And you could also be... an artist that doesn't necessarily have to be struggling, because everyone there is kind of like creative, especially like in Wellington, and it's like the price of living is a little lower, so you can still pursue
I'm
a bunch
moving.
Of creative.
That's it. I'm done.
And no, there's no predators.
Wow.
Yeah,
I like that.
So the show To Catch a Predator doesn't make any sense to anyone there.
It's called To Catch a Pedophile over there.
What a weird standoff we just had.
Yeah. Well, I think this way. Thwack.
Foot.
Oh, fuck you guys.
What?
What?
They're great. They're just, it was all out of context. Oh, that's what made it funny.
Such a great sequence.
All right, you know what?
It was really good. That's why I
got no, comics. No. God, you guys are just going to make it worse.
No. We're going to read another page so that people can read.
You know what? One note, number the fucking pages, Kirkman.
Don't read too far back.
No, we're not. Okay.
That's the first full six issues. Those won't be out for
another page of Oblivion Song. Here we go. You want to start? You want to go?
You can start this time.
Okay. I'm just getting the character.
Our scene takes place at Mount Kenya. I don't
scream.
Oh shit.
Croom.
Fuck. Flap. Goom. Ram.
And scene. I mean,
you didn't want to do click clack?
Oh man, I'm sorry. I didn't prepare for it. You know, like I went over this stuff last night with Lydia.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I felt it in the moment, and
I felt it too. Yeah. We can come back and we can do the rickrack later.
Also,
so Oblivion Song is really just the
interrupting
the
60s a rehearsal.
Batman television show of comics. is that what you guys are trying to portray as?
Do whip.
Zoom.
No, like people talk and say things and stuff in it.
The psychic character in my sci-fi novel from Crick-Crack to something else.
Gee, Crick-Crack, you're always getting into trouble.
I thought of that. That's a thing? Come on. No, it is. Actually,
it's called That Guy in Space.
Oh,
come on. Now I got to go to Mars? Come on. I'm tired of watching my poop float around in zero G's. Come on.
No, but I'm glad that I actually really did like Oblivion Song, and
You can't come back from the laugh reading of the sound effects. There's no saving that, Chris.
All right, enjoy your burrito.
I thought I got to say enjoy your burrito. All right.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million-dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.